We have been taking stock today of the moment we're in, the overall national response to George Floyd's death at the hands of Minneapolis police, the immediate events of the last few days in Boston and Washington. In our first two segments today, we learned about a call from elected officials of color to reform the police, plans for another peaceful protest tonight in Boston, and the actions of President Trump over the last 24 hours. And we've been taking your calls throughout. So for the rest of the hour, we want to process together. How are you thinking about this? How do you explain what's happening to yourself, to others? Where have we individually and collectively failed, and what are we doing right? What has to happen next? Share your thoughts. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. For this conversation, we have two guests. We're joined by Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, also an activist and an organizer. Welcome back, Reverend Mariama.
Good to be here.
And Shagun Itawu. He's the executive director at the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts and co-founder of the Boston Police Camera Action Team. Shagun, welcome.
I appreciate you having me today.
So if you don't mind, the two of you, I'd love to start by taking a call. Our lines have been full since before the break, and giving you a chance to engage directly with our listeners. I'd like to take a call from Brad in Belmont. Brad, go ahead.
Hi. Hello?
You okay, Brad?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. I'm well, thanks. Go ahead.
I'm afraid what I have to say it doesn't really have much to do with your guest right now. My former comment had to do with the last segment. I apologize.
No, that's okay, Brad. You go ahead and make your point. Our guests are well-versed.
I'm actually losing my battery. I'll call you back. Thank you.
Okay, so we had a little bit of a misfire with Brad there, so let me turn to the two of you, and I'm sorry to make you wait. I wanted to kind of begin to immediately engage. Reverend Mariama, let me start with you. We've talked to you a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. You delighted me with a call during our week in review, talking about the plans of your congregation and how you're balancing your congregation, your community, and now we add the events of the last week. How are you, and how are you thinking about it?
So my computer is acting up. So go ahead and talk to Shagun, and I'm going to try to figure out why it's doing this.
Okay, and we will all take a moment to say that the technological gods clearly are challenging us in this conversation between Brad's phone and Reverend Mariama's computer. Shagun, you've been very patient. Let me begin by checking in with you. How are you? What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I don't think I've fully processed everything that's been happening. I think a lot of people in my community feel the same way. A lot of us feel, can't believe we have to do this again. Not only that, but in the middle of a global pandemic. And so folks are not only risking their lives already because of the pandemic, which is hurting our community way more than others, but now have to protest systemic racism and police violence, and are risking ourselves in that way. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about something my grandfather told me back in 2012. He told me not to confuse motion with progress, because if I were to have moved his rocking chair, it would move but not make any progress. And so I've been thinking a lot about that and how we're here because we have been we've been okay with just making movement when it comes to solving a lot of these issues. I haven't made a lot of progress. So that's where I'm at this point.
Reverend Mariama, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I think that there are some ways in which I agree with Shagun. I think that there's a long way to go. I do think there are some promising signs in the sense that in the past, police officers were not even fired. no one was charged. So while I think that what is happening now is clearly inadequate, it shouldn't have taken national movement for Ahmaud Arbery's killers to be brought to justice. I do recognize that 5 years ago, they weren't even being brought to justice. They weren't even being arrested. That being said, this is really overwhelming. As a pastor, I mean, I think over this last week or so, I've had lots of calls, lots of moments with my parishioners who actually, we are a really multiracial community. We are 40% Black, but 35% white, 10% Latino, 10% Asian. Like, I've seen a level of anguish, I think, because everybody is wondering, what will it take for this to actually shift? You know, folks are trying to figure out, some of my members who are very active, but who have compromised immune systems and can't, I've been saying to them, I love you, but I can't condone you going out. I don't want you to get sick. And so there really are so many compounding issues. It feels like the world is falling apart. But part of what I've had to remind folks is, to some extent, for many of us, the world wasn't working before. And the big question becomes, I think, you know, as Segun mentioned, how do we not just move things around? How do we move them forward? And I think that is the question we really need to be wrestling with in this moment.
I'd like to add a caller voice here. Hopefully this time it's going to work out. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Jeannie on the line from the South Shore. Jeannie, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I will do my best to articulate what I can, despite my nerves, but a couple of things. I guess the number one of the things that just I keep envisioning is the coverage of white men in protests a week or so ago, protesting the restrictions on businesses and social things happening. And so people were protesting that. And I remember seeing people, these men, armed with guns that started at their shoulders and went down to like their waist, strapped with these guns. And it was shocking then. And now, you know, compared to what is now being said and compared to the people who are trying to protest peacefully. And I know it's not shocking to any of you, especially, you know, your guests,
But Jeannie, let us take it from there and get our guest's response to that. Jeannie, I'm sorry, I'm going to take it back from you. You've made a point there that I want to make sure I get a response from our guests on, because it's something that has come up. I'm glad you brought it up. It's come up repeatedly in the last couple of weeks, that the rhetoric in response to armed protesters inside and outside of government buildings in response to government shutdowns for the pandemic versus public response to protests in the streets, unarmed protests in the streets around the death of George Floyd. Segun, let me invite you to sort of first take the first reaction to that.
Well, you know, I'll thank Jeannie for raising that point. I mean, she's absolutely correct of the difference in reporting as well as the attitudes toward the folks who were doing that. You know, I won't even take it to folks who were armed across the country that were going to their state legislatures or other buildings to protest or demand that the state, that their state reopen. I'll just think of even here in Massachusetts, the folks who showed up to the governor's house and were protesting, the rhetoric and the sentiments of folks in response to that was that, well, clearly the governor needs to make this decision to reopen the state because people are frustrated and this proves it. And yet I remember very clearly back in 2014, 15, when organizers protested at the mayor's house here in Boston and the homes of other politicians, it was used against the organizers and against the protesters to say, how dare they show up to the homes of these politicians to make these demands? There are other ways to do this. And so, I mean, it just continues to prove the fact that when white people do it, it's okay and it's justifiable. I think even of the riots that happen after games, when the team wins or loses, but they are never ever tied to an entire community, or folks are not looked at in a negative manner. It's used to justify their concerns. But when Black people do it, there is always that voice saying, "You got to find another way." And so, you know, she's right to raise that point, and it's evident again here in this situation.
Reverend Mariam, I listen to Segun, I listen to Jeannie's call, and I think about a listener out there who is saying, at the same time, there have been people who have participated, have been on the streets during these protests around the country, who have committed acts of violence, who have committed looting, who have thrown bricks through glass, et cetera. What is the right contextual response to those behaviors and those choices in this moment?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are two pieces I would look at. So first of all, this kind of violence people do find shocking, but there are many kinds of violence that are dangerous and kill people that we never see. There are times when we make decisions about policies that mean life or death for people, and you don't get held accountable in the same way when you make decisions that will kill people in that way than when you see someone throwing a rock. So I just want us to remind ourselves that there's lots of ways to create harm, and some of the ones that seem relatively benign in some people's eyes are policy decisions, the decisions around hiring and firing when companies lay off, you know, thousands of workers when sometimes they don't need to. All of these can be real forms of violence that hurt people. But I think the second I think when you see people angry because they've experienced that kind of violence, that's real. And so I just want to name that. I'm not saying I condone it. I have never thrown a rock through something. I'm just wanting to name that people's frustration also comes out of the violence that they feel perpetrated against them. I think the second piece is, as someone who's been in those spaces, I want to question how much of the starting of these things is by young people in some of the most vulnerable and affected neighborhoods. I have been a marshal in some of these spaces. I've been on security teams. I know people who were on the security teams for what happened on Sunday. And what many of them said is that the folks who were most looking to rile people up were not young people of color from Roxbury experiencing police brutality, but white young people from other communities who we don't even know. So I think I just want people to be able to separate out the real demands that people are raising about the violence that they experience in their communities and those folks who are committing these acts, which a lot of times are not even the same people.
I'm about to go to a call. I do want to note in reference to what you just said, Reverend Mariama, that yesterday during the press conference, Boston Police Department Commissioner William Gross did note that about half of the arrests that came out of Sunday night were people who were from outside the city. That, of course, means the other half were people who were from inside the city, but about half were from outside. Let's take another call here, 1-800-423-8255. We have Jamil on the line from Dorchester. Go ahead.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Okay, great. Now, me, myself, I don't condone the looting and the violence and things of that nature, but a lot of things are very deep-rooted that people should at least try to think about. Now, some people say that, hey, you know, slavery, it happened a long time ago, you know, like, you know, it ended 100 years ago. But I think a lot of African-Americans, well, it's not just African-Americans looting. It's also some Caucasians and some Spanish. But I think a lot of African-Americans, a lot of them are still suffering from the ghosts of plantation life. What you have to think about, what happened to us during slavery is still affecting some of us. You have to think of it this way. Have a crystal vase. Sometimes people say vase. But let's imagine you have a crystal vase. A big, giant, beautiful one. You go on top of the Prudential building and you throw that vase down on the ground. That vase will shatter into a million, probably a trillion pieces. That is what happened to the soul, the social, economic, the moral, the human nature, the essence. That's what happened to African Americans during slavery. Slavery has done
I do mean to interrupt you. I apologize for interrupting you. But again, I want to pick up the point that you've made there. I want to stick with that mental image of the crystal vase, and I want to take, or vase, I grew up saying vase, and I want to bring it back to our panelists to give us a chance to respond to that thought and that imagery about the history of systemic racism and racial oppression in the United States. Shagun, let me invite you to respond to what Jamil's saying and to add your own thoughts to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jamil is right to bring that up. And that's exactly what we're talking about when we're in the streets. And you know, I just want to say, too, that I always appreciate being anywhere where Reverend Mariama is, you know, and her bringing her perspectives to this conversation. She's absolutely right, even as she talks about Sunday and who was stirring up a lot of the violence in the beginning. But, you know, Jamil is right about the fact that all of this has to do with the original sin of this country, which was the enslavement of African peoples. And the country has never, ever dealt explicitly with that issue. I mean, we can talk about the Civil War, but even after the Civil War, the country refused to deal with how to resolve and atone for its sin. You know, BECMA, the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts, put out a statement earlier this week where, you know, we acknowledge the fact that systemic racism is the disease that America has given up finding the vaccine for. And so the folks that you see in the streets today and the people who were doing the work every day in between those protests. And I think it's important to talk about the fact that, you know, these protests, you know, they highlight and amplify the points that are being that folks are raising. But people are talking about this and pushing back every single day. Reverend Mariama, Monica Cannon, Counselor Janie, and many, many others who are working on this every day to push our elected and appointed officials, to push folks in the business community to address this. But again, he's right. Systemic racism is the root cause for all of this. And, you know, there's a James Baldwin quote that's been floating around where he talks about the fact that, you know, it's taken my mother's time and my father's time, my sister's and my brother's time, my niece's and my nephew's time. How much time do you want for your progress? We've been waiting for so long for this issue to be addressed. And it's not until we address the root of this problem that we'll stop seeing these protests and this rebellion and these uprisings that we're seeing happening across the country.
So Reverend Mariama, in our last minute, understanding the size and the scope of what we face if we're going to start to take steps forward to heal, what is one public policy step that could happen next, that could happen now, that would put us on that path?
So I do want to both say there's no one thing we can do that's going to solve this, because it took us more than 400 years to get here, and we got a lot of work to do. That being said, there are some pretty clear evidence-based pieces about what we could do to reduce police brutality. And one of them is changing our policies to make sure that these practices are not allowed. And then when people violate the policies, I believe in unions, I believe in labor organizing, but sometimes our police contracts allow folks who have done these things again and again to have their records expunged or hidden from the community, which only makes them more likely to continue escalating this type of behavior. So I think we've got a lot to do in every part of our society, but I do think there are some basic evidence-based reforms that we can start with that address the specifics of this situation, even as we need to continue going deeper to face the ugly history that we have never fully addressed.
That's Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester and an activist and organizer. Thank you for joining us today. And Shigun Idowu, the executive director at the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts and co-founder of the Boston Police Camera Action Team. Thanks to you, too.